I hit 200. Holy fuck! Simon just cocked!
Holy shit.
Dude! Holy fuck! Simon!
Is this thing processing?
Holy
I got three.
Holy shit! Holy fuck!
Simon
destroyed!
Simon! Let's go. I know I can always rely on
Simon destroyed!
Wait, is that burger going crazy?
Dude!
Yeah,
this
is
going
to be a crazy live pod, yo.
The Sock Jig Sneaker Podcast. Took some acid and I'm ready to commit fraud. Welcome to episode 25 of the Sock Jig Sneaker Podcast. I am your host, Sock Jig. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Sock Jig. Off the top, I wanted to say I do have some more socks dropping soon in Iris Moon Blue colorway. Really, it's a navy colorway. This is kind of the last of the OGs based off the Calabasas ones. And Iris is a color for, you know, a blue or dark blue, and Moon comes from the song Moon from the latest Kanye album, so I gave it a pretentious name because it's fun to do so. I have the ability to do so. So those are dropping after Christmas. I haven't determined a time or a day yet, but there'll be plenty of notice on Instagram, on Twitter. I usually have to post it multiple times because, you know, the way Twitter is, you might not see it one day, or you might not see it in the morning, you might see it in the afternoon. So excuse my tweets on it if you see, but it's really just so I can get all the eyeballs on it. If you buy a pair of socks from me, thank you very much. That is how you can support me in this podcast. I do not ask for literally anything else. All the stuff I do on the show, all I've ever said is, hey, if I have socks, if you like the color, you can support me by buying it. And I try to make it fun and, you know, make include stickers and that kind of stuff all with it. So that's what I do instead of, you know, a Patreon or any other kind of membership stuff. You know, I think a Patreon would be a little bit too much responsibility for me. I would probably buckle under the pressure and not enjoy it. This way, everything is designed to be abandoned, and I can abandon anything at any time. So it's kind of an odd way to look at it, but I am having fun. So there's no abandoning on the timeline right now. I also wanted to say thank you for everyone who liked my worst sneakers of the year list that I posted on Twitter. And also thank you to House of Heat, who wanted to repost it on their site and, you know, plugged it on their Instagram as well. You know, it was funny. I got some feedback from people who do not know my voice on Twitter, who saw the list and were kind of, you know, obviously people, if you include a shoe that people like, they're going to get upset about it because it, you know, they feel like it's a personal attack. Or, you know, people missed the jokes and took it as a scholarly list that, you know, why wasn't this sneaker on there? Why was that the one on there? That kind of stuff. When really the answer, it was all joke based. You know, all those jokes I wrote off the cuff as I tweeted. Basically, I just had a notes app list of the worst shoes of the year. And I had a premise or an idea for a joke for some of them. And then as I was tweeting them, I wrote it out. For me, the point is almost always the joke before anything else, before making money even. Coming soon is the worst of the year in the world of sneakers. This is not a worst of the year's shoes list. This is kind of everything else. It's kind of where I recap everything wrong, dubious, scummy, scammy, all that kind of stuff, or just plain dumb that happened in 2021. That's always a fun list as well too. Same with that. It's based on jokes. It's not based on real hate or anything like that. So for topics today, I get a little heavy and I talk about the loss of Virgil Abloh and also Burger's Kicks. I bring it back around by talking about NFTs and sneakers. And then finally, there's some analysis on the best sneakers of the 2021 tournament that I held on Twitter and kind of, you know, some thoughts and things that I learned from that. So good show. Hope you enjoy it. But first, pickups on feet and skips and misses. On feet lately, you know, I kind of have to mix it up, but it's kind of hard to do in the winter too. I wore the Travis Fragment Lows one day. I wore the Gundam 98s only one day too. Those ones hurt my feet, so I didn't wear them again. And the Travis ones, I just didn't want to get them dirty, so I put them back on the shelf. I wore the Bape Stadium Goods Bapestas, which I picked up as well. The fit on those is a little off. It definitely feels like a fake Air Force One, which I guess it kind of is. But it fits more true to size in Air Force Ones. You don't have to go down half size on them. And the tongue is really small on them compared to an Air Force One. But the colorway is fire. I was happy to get them. Also been wearing as kind of the go-to by the door shoe has been my Salehe Water Be The Guide. Pickups, probably, I guess, quite a few since last time I recorded, which is a month ago. I picked up the Ama Manier Jordan 1s on the first drop. Glad to have those. That was a great drop. Lots of people hit. On the second drop, I tried for a friend, but it didn't work out. So I was in a queue for 10 minutes, and it was sold out by then. I also picked up, as I mentioned, the Bape Stadium Goods. I got both CDG foams, which is probably a little extravagant. But they're in my size, in size 13 I wear for foam posits, so which are kind of harder to get than the other sizes. I was waiting for the Angelo Back Gel Cano 14s to go on sale, and they finally did, so I picked up those for pretty cheap for, you know, 50% off. I also got the Cool Gray 11s. You know, for that drop, they didn't even drop in Canada, so I had to get up and try on US sites. And I avoid sneakers, so, you know, my options were like DTLR, Jimmy Jazz, Undefeated, and, you know, whoever else, Shoe Palace I was dropping. I went with Undefeated, figuring they would have decent stock, would have good protection. You know, the other sites often preload their page, so their variants and everything are out, so it's not always the easiest cop from them. So Cool Gray 11s, I was able to pick up from Undefeated then, but those are shipped to my US address, so I don't have them in hand. I picked up the boots that Haven released, their first footwear one. I'm really happy with those. And today I was able to pick up the Kith Nix Black Air Force One through the loyalty access. You know, you kind of, you live by the loyalty access, you die by it if you get it or not. You know, which leads to the skips misses part. I missed on the Salmon Toe Gel Light 5 on Kith because I've never copped on ASICS Kith, so I never get access for those. So I'm usually sitting there twiddling my thumbs while everyone else has access. I missed on the Soulfly 1s as I tweeted on Twitter because I was going for these Salomon Advanced ACS shoes, which I also have been flying. So I missed on those. And I also missed on the Beluga reflective shoes. Really, I just tried on Confirmed and maybe one of the raffle didn't hit. Moved on with my day. I wanted to talk about the passing of Virgil Abloh and also Burgers Kicks, well known on sneaker Twitter and on YouTube. You know, I have some thoughts about death and grief, and they're all kind of jumbled together. So talking is often the best way to kind of get it out there. So, you know, thinking about Virgil Abloh and his legacy and what he left, a lot of his work makes a lot more sense now than maybe it did in these last couple of years. You know, the 50 dunks make way more sense. You know, my criticism at the time was it's a bit much, that there was just too many colorways, too many stuff. Like, why do all this? And why not take a break? But, you know, the clock was ticking and he knew it, but we didn't know it. So that's why it seems like he was making as many things as he could with the time that he had left. You know, the Evian water bottles and IKEA rugs and all that other extra stuff too. The even selling off 60% share of Off-White to the, you know, the LVMH group or whatever it's called. You know, he has a quote where everything I do is for the 17-year-old version of myself. And, you know, every time I see that quote, I think, man, I was an idiot at 17. I was probably just listening to Green Day or watching music videos and Animaniacs or something like that back then. But, you know, that's how he handled himself. And when someone passes, that is kind of a lesson that you can learn, is how that person handled himself in life. You know, when everyone was posting private chats and stuff that he had, he was nice to everyone. He was out there and talking with people, that he was in Instagram comments, as I talked about before. And, you know, thinking back, it really was true. You never did see Virgil give any kind of dickish response to anything, you know, especially when he was accused of stealing other designs and things like that. and that kind of stuff. He was so good that it was fun to make fun of him. You know, those Chicago White Sox hats with the holes, right? Those are horrible. You didn't have to like those, but he had a thing with holes and it kind of made sense to him. And that's what I mean, where he was so good that you could make fun of them because most everything else was always so good. And, you know, in many ways, you know, Ronnie Feig is a very much a version of this as well, too. You know, Ronnie always represents himself and his city and his friends well. So it's fun to make fun of him and his Captain Crunch collab or whatever. If anything, I think Ronnie should slow down now that he's a family man. But, you know, this Virgil passing, it just shows that you really don't know what is going on or what motivates people to be prolific with their time and with their output of work. I was hoping someone would do a podcast chronicling all of Virgil's sneakers and kind of going through them one by one, but it seems like no one did, so I might just have to do that myself a little bit later, so stay tuned for that. And seemingly, like, days later, we learned about the death of Ricky Bergstrom, also known as Burger's Kicks, suddenly passing away from a car accident. If you didn't know him, Berger posted videos on YouTube and Twitter about botting and live cops and things like that. You know, I don't bot, but that's why I watched his videos, because it was entertaining to see that kind of stuff, the other side of what you go through. And he was just so entertaining in his videos. You know, after a big drop, you'd wait for the Twitter instant reaction and hope he either cooked or he slept in. Either way, you knew it would be entertaining. Because they were so entertaining, you couldn't help but be on his side. You know, I was thinking about him a lot on this Beluga Reflective drop the other day that, you know, the couple hours afterwards he would have posted something and you're kind of looking for it. And that is the kind of a loss you feel when someone is gone. I posted some of this on Twitter, but I wanted to say, like, you know, I bought his tea last year because I wanted to support him. And I told a story where I was walking down the street with the shirt on and some lady said, "Hey, do you sell burgers or tennis shoes?" And I said, "Tennis shoes." And just a few months ago, he replied to a tweet of mine and he said, "Hey, I need some Sock Jig socks." And I DM'd him and we had a little conversation. And, you know, later when he had them, he tweeted himself wearing them. You know, we had a couple, some private conversations. I got to tell him some things that he was very happy to hear, but which I'll keep private. And I saw other people post their private chats with Ricky, and he couldn't have been sweeter or nicer to them. It was, you know, it was really comforting to see that he really was that type of guy. So, you know, I'm thankful for those private conversations that I had. You know, they were very few, but I'm still thankful for them. It was such a tragic loss that, you know, when someone has their whole life in front of them, it really does hurt. And so my condolences to his friends and his family. You know, I talked about how talking kind of helps, and another thing that's always helped for me is music. There's a song called Dark Horse by a hardcore heavy metal band called Converge from their 2009 album Acts to Fall. You know, it's not exactly the sweet kind of pop top 40 type of song that you hear. You know, the song is probably going to sound very dark and very menacing, but really it is kind of the opposite. The song is about finding your way out of grief and loss and the people you've lost and how they can help you move forward, even in their absence. The dark horse in the song is, of course, impending death, and it talks about how the dark horse will one day come for us all and to free the light from all of us. But what it's really talking about is that light that is freed from you will be used by the people that are left. That it will be used to light their way forward. You know, I know plenty about loss and grief. The path that I'm on in life is an alternate path. You know, I should be on a completely different path where the people are still here. But I know I'm being metaphorical here. But what I'm saying is that when someone dies that you care about and you're looking at the rest of your life that you have in front of you and what can you do, what can you learn from them to live your life going forward, really that is how I kind of live my life, especially the Twitter version of my life. It explains a lot of how I am on this podcast and on Twitter. If I look like I'm doing things for fun instead of money, or if I'm not letting a sneaker L get me down, that is why. And that's entirely where the Mr. Brightside bit comes from, to make people feel better after an L by talking shit about the shoe. It's also why no one can say shit to me, and so when someone does, I'm there to cut it down right away. You know, so thinking about Ricky and Virgil and, you know, other stuff that's been going on in real life, we can learn to be more joyful like Ricky was. We can learn to be more sweet in the DMs like Virgil and Ricky were. You know, more putting people on. Virgil put people on. Virgil's whole thing was about free game and how anyone can do this, and here's the blueprint how. You know, I'd like to see more of people doing that, especially in the sneaker world, especially from people in the position to. You know, a lot of people out here are just, you know, repping their own work or the company they work for, and that's it, and that's enough for them. That's kind of almost who I'm talking to here. Like, you can do kind of more than just that. But it doesn't even have to be from someone in a position to put people on. You know, everyone could put people on. There was a tweet recently where it was like, you know, your homies are out here wishing Jay-Z a happy birthday, but not supporting any of your projects. And all that stuff is free. So, you know, more repping your friends and their projects, and you don't have to wish Jay-Z or Tinker Hatfield a happy birthday. Because as they say in that song, the dark horse will one day come, you know, to free the light from all of us. And then you got to ask yourself, what have you done? How are you spending your time? Who are you helping? One day the dark horse will come. All right, now that I've talked about impending doom, let's go on to something else. Let's talk about NFTs and sneakers. Now, you know, a warning about all this stuff. I don't own any NFTs. I've not collected any. So take this as a kind of outsider's point of view. You know, I want to talk about it in terms of Nike and Adidas's play and kind of where it's going. Not really about commentary about NFTs themselves or their value as collectibles and stuff. I see the value. I see it as a money play. I respect it as a money play. You can't have the slogan of the game is the game and then disrespect money plays. If you're making a ton of money, the answer is always going to be the game is the game. If I had a sign, I would, you know, tap the sign. We saw Adidas dive right in, and, you know, they recently had their minting process for NFTs where they sold 30,000 NFTs for 0.2 ETH Ethereum. And at current, you know, USD valuation, that's, you know, almost 27, 28, 30 million that they just, you know, conjured out of thin air right now with partnering with whatever the monkeys that they partnered with. You know, I was thinking about that. I was like, is that money going to show up on balance sheets at the end of the year? Will Casper be talking about that on earnings call? You know, will Matt Powell be talking about this and how much money they've made? Or does it stay in a crypto wallet somewhere away from government reach and, you know, government taxes and stuff like that? But anyways, that's not, you know, I'm not a business podcast. From what I saw about Adidas, they made mistakes with their drop, just like they do with sneakers. And there was a big thread on Twitter where someone, you know, from sneaker Twitter actually was able to buy hundreds of the NFTs when really you were supposed to be limited to two. So it's nice to see that some things don't change even in the metaverse. There's also a critique there where all the sustainability stuff that Adidas does is kind of thrown out the window when you're making $30 million on JPEGs and all the gas fees and stuff that goes into that. But that kind of critique, you know, it depends on who it comes from, because a sneakerhead saying that looks like a fool when they themselves are buying hundreds of sneakers that are polluting, you know, oceans and generating, using a lot of plastic and glue and all that kind of stuff. So Nike, on the other hand, they bought this other studio, RTFKT Studios, that does a lot of, you know, this NFT stuff as well. And they sent out a press release about it that basically said nothing. It said, you know, we're big in the brand. We want to, you know, leverage our ability in the metaverse to, sell virtual stuff. It's like, it doesn't say anything. And really, when you think about it, why would you need a virtual shoe? Why wouldn't Nike make a virtual sneaker? Subtracting the collectability part itself, think about the utility. Is there utility for a sneaker in a metaverse? I mean, it's all a make-believe world. Am I going to be walking in the metaverse? No one told me they'd be walking. Why wouldn't they just make some cool shit like Nike Dragons or something where it shoots fire in the shape of a swoosh if it's all just a make-believe world? But anyways, we got a bunch of pictures of shoes, I guess. I don't see how NFTs apply to sneakers right now, other than selling you a bunch of, you know, branded tracksuits later of your monkey. You know, if buying an NFT gives some sort of special access, you know, imagine telling someone they need to get on a whitelist to purchase an NFT by first purchasing some ETH through their MetaMask wallet and, you know, pay the gas fees on that so they can enter a raffle, you know, for a chance to buy a sneaker. If you have no idea what I just said, don't worry, you're not alone. It's like, am I going to do all that shit? No, you wouldn't for a sneaker. But if a monkey picture is worth, you know, $10,000, sure, then you would. I tweeted about this, you know, kind of abstractly when Nike made that purchase. And I talked about what is the purpose of a business. And, you know, a lot of times people say the primary reason for a business is to make money, and I said that that is wrong. That is not what businesses are for. I said the purpose of any business is to serve society. Serve society in that someone needs something, so a business is there to fulfill that need. And, you know, that is how the economy works, that's how people function, that's how things get done, so another thing gets done. Really, the purpose of any business is to create a paying customer. If there is someone there willing to pay for something, then you can serve as a business to give them that thing that they need. So that's why I was arguing that, you know, it doesn't really matter. You know, Nike doesn't really care about monkeys being worth $10,000. They care about, in this world right now, there are people willing to pay for things. And that's why they want in. The real value is in creating customers. You know, I did not just make all this stuff up out of thin air. This is actually from Peter Drucker, who's a well-known writer on business and kind of known as the father of business consulting books and things like that. And another thing that he says is that because the only thing that you're doing is trying to create a customer, the business enterprise has only two basic functions, marketing and innovation. Marketing and innovation produce results and all the rest are costs. Marketing is the distinguishing, unique function of a business. So Drucker said that in, you know, the 40s or the 50s or something like that. But when you think of Nike and how they operate, they are all about marketing and innovation. You know, it's been said that Nike is a marketing company that sells sneakers. And guess what? NFTs are all about marketing and innovation. Only the ones that are marketed right or who were first to market or have innovative features are the ones that are worth anything. Now, you know, I've been vocal about not really giving a shit about NFTs. There's just no utility in it for me. There's no reason for me to spend the free time that I have left in Discords, trying to get on whitelists, trying to save on gas fees for, you know, fucking monkeys. But that's because of who I am and where I am in life and my age, I guess. And if you're 21 and you have all that time and you're doing all this and it's generating wealth for you, that is great. The game is the game. Keep going. You know, I'm not an NFT hater, or at least especially of the technology behind it. It has a lot of promise, but really I'd like to see the promise, not just from NFTs, but from the shit that Mark Zuckerberg says about the metaverse and everything and how it's going to change our lives. The example he gives is like barely anything. It's virtual meetings with your avatars. You know, I'm already in these Zoom calls with my camera off. What do I want to show up as? Some fucking Animal Crossing meeting. You know, show me the use case. Show me the utility where it's not tied to making money. And I will probably care. Because most of the art of this NFT stuff looks like dog shit to me. Just, you know, complete, utter dog shit. And I, you know, on this podcast, I criticize Daniel Arsham for making art for commerce sake. You know, which is fine to do. He's fine. He's good at that. My critique was that it's art with no soul. And if you want to see art with no soul, just look at any bullshit fucking prison bred monkey avatar. Now, I can see a world where we own virtual assets. I'm not against the premise of owning virtual assets. I'm against the premise of tying it to some dog shit monkey avatars, I guess. For now. Show me better utility, show me better use case, and I'll be in. This whole kind of abstract talk about we're going to live in the metaverse is not cutting it for me. You know, I could see where people who are big into this NFT world might disagree with me, especially when you spend a lot of your personal time into it. And like I said, I respect it as a money play, if you're in it purely for the money play. But I've seen people who has warped their mind into thinking that this stuff is like good art and people just aren't seeing it. And really, that's just the money that's kind of warped your mind. If it was all worth pennies, would you spend all day in Discords trying to get on a whitelist for some JPEG? Probably not. But if you made a ton of money on NFTs and you disagreed with what I said, it doesn't really matter. You're rich and a Republican now, so who cares? Finally, I wanted to do some analysis on the sneaker bracket I did for the best sneakers of 2021 on my Twitter through Twitter polls. How it worked was I ranked the top 64 sneakers of the year in kind of my arbitrary order, which then gets slotted into matchups based on their rank. So how bracketology works is number one goes against 64, two against 63, etc., all the way out. And those matchups are then spread out in regions. You have a west and east region and a north and a south region within each region. You know, that part I don't select. That's just all part of bracketology and kind of what the NCAA does. I just rank the shoes and I enter the rankings into my code and it generated the bracket. So I rank the shoes, but it's not exactly my personal preference, but really that bias is going to be there no matter what. So for example, the Joe Fresh Goods shoe is not a top 10 shoe for me personally, but obviously I know it is for a lot of people. So it's ranked as number four. So real quick, I'll just go through the top 10 rankings for what I had. It's number 10. I had the New Balance 2002 Protection Pack Gray. I know it has a real name, but really, if Protection Pack is out there, that's the name the streets gave it. So you lost on that one, whatever the real name is. Number 9, the Air Max 1 Pata, the Monarch. And what I did was I combined a lot of shoes, so I picked the best one out of a set. So, you know, there's a few Pata Air Max 1s to choose from, so I just picked the Monarch one. Same with, like, the Supreme SB Dunks. You know, I didn't want to put all four in there and, you know, kick out three other good shoes that could make the list. So, number 8, I had the Jordan 1 Trophy Room. Number 7, the Jordan 2 Off-White Chicago. Number 6, the Travis 1 Fragment High. Number 5, the Salehe Waterby the Guide Shoe. Number 4, Joe Fresh Goods. Number 3, the Dunk Low Panda. Number 2, the Travis Fragment Low, and number 1, the Jordan 3 Alma Meunier. You know, the beauty of the brackets and the voting is that it doesn't really matter the kind of the order of the top 10. There's not a huge difference between number 5 and 7, because the best shoe will move on, and it will eventually meet up against another good shoe, and the people will decide which one is the better one. I chose competitiveness over variety in terms of how I make the list. I did not include, let's say, brands I have good relationships with. If I was a media outlet, you know, it's purely based on what I think is a good sneaker. And some stuff that, you know, like a certain Reeboks and other shoes that I think are really good shoes, but I know they would get like soldered in the first round if it's not a well-known sneaker. So I tried to balance that out. And I also tried not to flood it with just Jordan 1s and Dunks and kind of pick the best ones. Also, I didn't play the semantics game of, you know, is a boot a sneaker? Why are there Crocs on there? The footwear bracket doesn't sound really good, so I didn't give a shit about semantics. We'll save that for the future Sockjig Linguistics podcast, you know, coming soon. It'll be riveting stuff. But what happens when you make this kind of stuff is people get mad, and I always say that the whole point that I'm doing this is to get people to get mad, just so we have something to do, so we have entertainment for the day. So when people reply to me, I have fun with it. And, you know, I tell them, hey, any shoe that you think should have been on the list that isn't, put it in slot 40 to 64 and let me know if it wins the first round in voting. Because the list is not really about what you think is the best sneaker. It's about the best sneaker that will be voted forward. And this is voting only by us on Sneaker Twitter. I'm sure the polls would be very different if I did it on Instagram, and it might be different if I just do it a different day on Twitter itself too. You know, one shoe I genuinely did forget to put on there was the Paul Rodriguez SB. And really, I just completely forgot. And really, I don't regret it that much because I didn't think that sneaker was that great. But I know a lot of people love P-Rod and love that shoe. So it should have been at least in the 50s or 60s. The other thing that was interesting was Bad Bunny Form sneaker was the only non-Yeezy Adidas shoe to make the list. Adidas has made a lot of decent shoes, but were they, you know, top 50, top 60 great? No, they were some good shoes, but nothing that great. So I'm going to go by the rounds and I'm going to talk about some of the things I saw in there, some of the upsets and stuff like that. I'm not going to go, of course, by every single matchup. That would just take too long. But I will include the links to the bracket generator in the show notes and as well to the final results so you can, you know, follow along if you didn't see it on Twitter Live. So in round one, the upsets were 45th ranked Kobe 6 Del Sol beat CDG Foams. And this is one of the ones where, you know, a CDG Foam is not exactly a regular sneakerhead shoe, even though a Foamposite is a classic old head shoe. And people love the Kobe 6. So maybe this is a case where I, you know, overranked the CDG Foams and underranked the Kobe 6. But the voters spoke up and kind of put the Kobe 6 over. Also, number 43, the Taupe Haze Air Jordan 4, not the Union one, the other one, beat the ALD 550, which was number 22. That was a surprise to me. I thought the ALD 550 would go a lot farther. But we also saw number 38, the Yeezy Knit Runner, the one that looks like, you know, a yellow patty, beat the ALD 990 V3, the beef and broccoli pair. Maybe that's another case where I overranked that shoe just because of New York's influence. That shoe does look good on New Yorkers and probably only New Yorkers. You know, I don't know the mind of voters exactly what they were thinking. Some of these were close calls, but you see a pattern kind of emerge, which I'll talk about at the end, about New Balances themselves. Another really close call in round one was the number 5 Salehe Water Be the Guide over the 60th Strawberry Milk Social Status Dunk. I thought that was kind of surprising, and it kind of told me that the Salehe one won't last that long and that maybe I overvalued it at number 5 and undervalued the number 60 Strawberry Milk Dunk. But Salehe did win and kind of moved on to round 2. Also close was number 23 Medium Curry Dunk over the number 42 Hyper Royal Air Jordan 1. I really thought here the Hyper Royal Air Jordan 1 might take it, because when I first sent links out for the bracket generator, a lot of people had both the University Blue and the Hyper Royal Jordan 1 as their favorite sneaker of the year. In round 2, there are quite a few upsets. The Ama Manier Jordan 1, number 25, took out number 8 Trophy Room Jordan 1. That was kind of a shock, and it seemed like voters were punishing Trophy Room for how it released. And as I mentioned, another upset was the Salehe lost in round 2 to the number 28 Mummy SB. Also, the number 18 Para Dunk just kind of trounced the number 15 Dusty Olive Dunk. And the same kind of New Balance pattern emerged where the Medium Curry Dunk beat the number 10 Protection Pack New Balance. Some buzzer beaters in round 2, the Joe Fresh Goods just barely beat the number 29 Lightning 4s. And the Kobe 6, number 45, beat Yeezy Slides by basically one vote. So it's one of those ones where if you did it again, it might be totally different. In round 3, the upsets were the Off-White Dunk at number 14 rank beat the number 3 Panda. This is the case where maybe I overranked the Panda and should have had maybe the Off-White Dunk in that spot. And this is where I mean, where if I make a mistake on this kind of stuff, the voters will let me know anyways. Another upset was the number 11 Supreme Dunk beat the number 6 Travis Fragment High. This was actually a pretty close tie, but then Supreme Drops on Twitter kind of tweeted it out. Hey, the Supreme Dunk can't lose to the Travis. And then I think a bunch of late voters kind of pushed it forward, which, you know, is Twitter and that's how it is. If you want to retweet and say, hey, everyone vote for this, you're free to do so. In round 3, there was 2 that actually went to overtime. It said 50-50, so I just did like a quick 5-minute overtime. That was number 9 Pata Air Max 1 and number 25 Ama Manier number 1, Jordan 1. The Pata went over there, and then the Mummy SB number 28 beat the Foam Runner. Number, you know, the Mummy SB was kind of the the Cinderella, I guess, in this bracket of going much further than it people thought it would. And then you saw in round four, it beat number four, Joe Fresh Goods. And also in round four, the Off-White Dunk beat the Supreme Dunk. So the final four was the Amma Munyir 3 versus the Mummy SB. And then the Eastern matchup was the Travis Fragment Low versus the Off-White Dunk. And both of those, as you may have saw, the Amma Munyir 3 won and the Travis Low won. And so that was the championship matchup. And then the overall champion was the Jordan 3 Amma Munyir. So, you know, looking back at the list, there are some shoes I may have, like, overranked. For example, the Slahi, Water Be the Guide, the Panda Dunk. And there was shoes that I underranked, like the Mummy SB, the Kobe 6, the Off-White Dunk, and the Para SB. But as I said, you know, a shoe only goes as far as it deserves. Voters, you saw, also liked shoes that they could actually get and seemed to punish those ones that they couldn't get. You know, last year when I did this list, it was like the Travis SB, the Union 4, and a bunch of other stuff that was impossible to get. So really that sentiment kind of seems like it's changed a bit, or, you know, maybe I'm just overanalyzing. As I said, the other thing I saw was that New Balance only went so far. Even last year, it only went so far. This year, the Joe Fresh Goods one made it to the Elite 8, but no other New Balance made it out of round 2. On Twitter, I theorized that a shoe in hand kind of matters to people. Something like a Jordan 1 is hard to get. Stock is sometimes still, you know, say 60K, 80K. Whereas for a New Balance, for say the Joe Fresh Goods shoe, the stock might be 15K or 10K or something like that. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, as New Balance grows and if they increase stock as they grow and get more shoes in hands and, you know, create more of that kind of history with people, will it go up in these lists? Maybe I'll probably stop doing these lists by then anyways. And the champion was the Amma Munyir 3. I think, you know, everyone probably thought it would win, but it really just kind of dominated every matchup. It won all of its matchups by 70-80%. So that was the bracket for this year. We'll probably do it again next year. Maybe I'll do another bracket sometime in the mid-year for something random. We'll see. But honestly, the poll was a lot of fun to do over the couple days. It was a lot of fun to make. It was a lot of fun to rank. It was a lot of fun to see what people were going to vote for. So I hope you had fun. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. This has been episode 25 of the Sock Jig Sneaker Podcast. Thanks for listening. Sock Jig out. But also go fuck yourself.